significant about elections that's going to be that's taking place tomorrow, or arguments?
Yes, thank you, Amy. Yes, the Harper Moore case that is going to be argued tomorrow, which is a case that deals with whether or not state legislatures will have sole authority in deciding their election laws, even surpassing not only federal law, but even their own constitutions and their own state courts. And we know how important this is because we've seen that in some of these states over the past couple of years, it's been the state courts that have stepped in to curb some of the voter suppression, to curb some of the gerrymandering that we've seen taking place. This would give these legislatures, complete control, separate from the democratic process. This could be literally, without exaggeration, this could be the final nail in the concept of democracy in this country if these state legislatures are able to run rogue without having any kind of accountability.
And of course, we'll continue to cover that. Cliff Albright, co-founder and executive director of Black Voters Matter. A very happy birthday to Democracy Now!'s Igor Moreno. And I'm so glad to be back from Egypt because I get to go to Juan's next two talks. He just gave one last week. We're posting the full talk online at democracynow.org. But this Friday, Juan Gonzalez is giving one of his final farewell talks at the CUNY School of Labor and Urban Studies at 3 p.m., speaking about 50 years of defending and chronicling America's workers. That's Friday at 3. Monday at 6:30, he'll give an address on Latinos, Race, and Empire at the CUNY Graduate Center. Go to democracynow.org for all the details. Juan, I can't wait to see you there in person. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Dear KBOO listeners, fantastic KBOO community, we want to inform you that right now our phone system is offline. Again, at the moment, our phone system is entirely offline. Our engineering department is tackling this issue with urgency. We apologize for any inconvenience, and thank you for supporting KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end-of-year drive. Help us meet our $70,000 fundraising goal by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. KBOO's independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO by entering 44321 and text the word KBOO. Our members continue to support community radio every time they give.
Volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up,
on this end-of-the-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Oregon's new gun control law gets stalled in court. Two Trump Organization companies are convicted of tax fraud. And in international news, Chinese protesters push back on zero COVID policy. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 6th. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year fundraising drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online at kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. Oregon's new Measure 114 was passed by voters in November and is supposed to take effect this Thursday. It's a landmark new gun control law that has been challenged in different courts for violating the Second Amendment. The Oregon Department of Justice also made a request to delay the implementation of the permitting requirement because local law enforcement wasn't prepared. Today, a federal judge ruled that most of the provisions of Measure 114 can go on as scheduled. This includes the ban on magazines over 10 bullets. The judge also ruled that the permitting requirement can be delayed by 30 days to allow law enforcement to set up the process. But just hours after handing down this ruling, a state-level judge blocked the law in its entirety. Harney County Circuit Court Judge Robert Rascio ruled that allowing the magazine ban to go into effect would violate the constitutional right of Oregonians. The Oregon Department of Justice says they will file a mandamus petition to ask the Oregon Supreme Court to look at the case immediately. The measure is one of the strongest gun control laws in the nation, but how much of Measure 114 will be implemented by Thursday's deadline, if any, is still up in the air. A jury in New York finds that two companies in the Trump Organization are guilty of criminal tax fraud and falsifying business documents in a 15-year scheme. The companies defrauded tax authorities by not paying their taxes on what they paid top executives. The penalty could reach $1.6 million. Trump Corporation and Trump Payroll were found guilty on all charges, though Trump personally and his family were not named as defendants. In closing arguments, the prosecutor argued that Trump, quote, personally sanctioned fraud and that executive Alan Weisselberg didn't act alone. Trump and his companies are the subject of a number of other lawsuits, including one from the New York District Attorney's Office worth $250 million. That one alleges he and his children were involved in decades-long fraud. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg said, quote, this was a case about greed and cheating. The Trump Corporation and Trump Payroll Corporation got away with a scheme that awarded high-level executives with lavish perks and compensation while intentionally concealing the benefits from the taxing authorities to avoid paying taxes. Today's verdict holds these Trump companies accountable for their long-running criminal scheme, end quote. A Portland police officer and a representative for the controversial technology firm ShotSpotter appear to have closely coordinated to avoid an open bidding process on services for the city. That's according to public records obtained by OPB. ShotSpotter is a gunshot detection.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Now it seems that the company and
police worked together to avoid a competitive bidding process for the city contract. As we've learned these past few years, protecting our democracy requires everyone's participation to help discern truth from fiction and listen to experts seeking to uphold our laws and republic rather than promote conspiracies.
Arizona's Secretary of State Katie Hobbs has signed papers to certify the results of the state's midterm elections, a historically low-profile event that is expected to draw immediate legal challenges. Two Arizona counties initially delayed certifying their results after some Republican officials made unfounded claims that voters were disenfranchised due to malfunctioning voting machines. Among the races Hobbs certified was her own win in the state's governor's race. In Georgia, the final push is underway in the U.S. Senate runoff election.
The there is still city time on the clock. We still have a window of opportunity to shape our destiny as a state, as a country, and as a world. That is the privilege of living in a democracy. Our vote matters.
Georgia's Democratic Senator John Ossoff told students at Georgia Tech that they will be the deciding voice in the election between Democratic incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker. Both candidates fell short in last month's midterm election of the 50% threshold required to secure a win.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre
says President Joe Biden is upholding his commitment to promote diversity by supporting changes to the Democratic Party's primary calendar.
To him, respecting our diversity as a nation and breaking down barriers for our people is a fundamental principle.
A Democratic National Committee panel has voted to make South Carolina the first state to cast ballots, replacing Iowa. New Hampshire would share a primary 3 days later with the state of Nevada. New Hampshire Senators Jean Shaheen and Meghan Hassan chose to skip the White House congressional ball Monday evening in protest. The Supreme Court heard arguments from a graphic artist in Colorado who objects to designing wedding websites for gay couples, despite the state's protective anti-discrimination law. Justice Sonia Sotomayor asked what unintended consequences a ruling in the artist's favor would have for other businesses.
How about people who don't believe in interracial marriage? Or about people who don't believe that disabled people should get married? Where's the line?
A bipartisan group of senators says they are working to protect so-called dreamers before Republicans take control of the House next month. The group has proposed a path to legalization for the roughly 2 million undocumented people who arrived in the U.S. as minors in exchange for increased border security funding. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Easing quarantines and returning to something resembling normal life. Neither in size, breadth of support, geographic scope, or political conflict were these protests anything like Tiananmen. Predictably, China's security apparatus is responding by cracking down on anyone who seemed to be leading the protests. But there really are no leaders, just fed-up people. The real question is how lasting the protests might be and whether or not they will evolve into resistance. That seems increasingly unlikely. Beijing is now easing COVID restrictions, putting pressure on protesters either to keep going or claim a small victory and disperse. It's like some national subconsciousness that resurfaces, said Jeremy Barmé, a New Zealand scholar. Now it's resurfaced again, this projection of self and of rights and ideas. She was referring to comments on China's internet about civil liberties, democratic values, and freedom of movement. For some time, amidst a repression that has become the hallmark of the Xi era, these ideas have rarely surfaced, confined to small discussion groups of intellectuals and students. But it's questionable how much the general public shares such sentiments. Their concern is more likely about the arbitrary rules governing zero COVID that have forced them into isolation and considerable disruption to their daily lives. And they have been protesting those restrictions for a long time in their own neighborhoods. The Xi Jinping leadership may appear finally to be listening to the complaints, though that would be very much out of character. Frustrated students, Xi admitted of the protesters, perhaps recognition that he needs to respond to their anger. Most likely to dictate Xi's response is the severe impact on China's economy of the zero COVID policy and the protests. Suddenly, public health officials are saying the threat from the Omicron variant is fading, and China's zero COVID policy is working, allowing for an easing of the rules. New regulations have been issued that promise quarantining at home rather than in some horrendous camp. Lockdowns of businesses are ending in some cities. Mass testing will be reduced. The Foxconn plant that produces Apple products seems to be resuming production after protests over wages and work conditions. I can only speculate about the long-term consequences of these protests, which may wither or resurface depending in part on whether the party really is ready to abandon COVID. At the least, these protests have considerably dented Xi Jinping's reputation and the durability of his leadership at the very moment of triumph in extending his rule at the 20th Party Congress. It is now clear that many Chinese do not approve of his rule, and a safe prediction is that such disapproval is shared by some among the political elite. Given his stubborn character and unrelenting search for enemies since he took command in 2012, he might authorize another wave of repression, such as he has previously carried out against corrupt party officials, dissident human rights lawyers, ethnic groups, and pro-democracy advocates. Moreover, Xi's ability to deliver on a serious dialogue with the U.S. on climate change and other global issues may be undermined. As always, we'll have to wait and see. From Mao to now, what China's leaders have most feared is organized resistance that would challenge the party state's monopolization of power. That is not what we're witnessing today, though the protesters' display of a blank sheet of paper recalls Mao's dictum that on a blank sheet of paper many beautiful characters can be written, by which he meant revolution. As Nicholas Kristof writes in the New York Times, historically in China, mass protests have arisen not when conditions were most intolerable, like the famine from 1959 to 1962, but when people thought they could get away with them. Students and intellectuals were pivotal to all those protests. Even when unsuccessful at transforming China's political system, they signaled that democratic thought was alive under very harsh authoritarian rule. Xi's zero COVID policy has been a strategic mistake from which he may never fully recover, especially if the high number of cases we're seeing continue to rise as he resists foreign-made vaccines and fails to attend to the poorly protected elderly population. I'm Mel Gertow for the Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
Arizona has officially certified their midterm election results despite claims of fraud, and candidates make a final push for votes in today's Georgia Senate runoff election. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
As we've learned these past few years, protecting our democracy requires everyone's participation to help discern truth from fiction and listen to experts seeking to uphold our laws and republic rather than promote conspiracies.
Arizona's Secretary of State Katie Hobbs has signed papers to certify the results of the state's midterm elections, a historically low-profile event that is expected to draw immediate legal challenges. Two Arizona counties initially delayed certifying their results after some Republican officials made unfounded claims that voters were disenfranchised due to malfunctioning voting machines. Among the races Hobbs certified was her own win in the state's governor's race. In Georgia, the final push is underway in the U.S. Senate runoff election.
There is still time on the clock. We still have a window of opportunity to shape our destiny as a state, as a country, and as a world. That is the privilege of living in a democracy. Our vote matters.
Georgia's Democratic Senator John Ossoff told students at Georgia Tech that they will be the deciding voice in the election between Democratic incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker. Both candidates fell short in last month's midterm election of the 50% threshold required to secure a win. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says President Joe Biden is upholding his commitment to promote diversity by supporting changes to the Democratic Party's primary calendar.
To him, respecting our diversity as a nation and breaking down barriers for our people is a fundamental principle.
A Democratic National Committee panel has voted to make South Carolina the first state to cast ballots, replacing Iowa. New Hampshire would share a primary 3 days later with the state of Nevada. New Hampshire Senators Jeanne Shaheen and Maggie Hassan chose to skip the White House congressional ball Monday evening in protest. The Supreme Court heard arguments from a graphic artist in Colorado who objects to designing wedding websites for gay couples, despite the state's protective anti-discrimination law. Justice Sonia Sotomayor asked what unintended consequences a ruling in the artist's favor would have for other businesses.
How about people who don't believe in interracial marriage? Or about people who don't believe that disabled people should get married? Where's the line?
A bipartisan group of senators says they are working to protect so-called dreamers before Republicans take control of the House next month. The group has proposed a path to legalization for the roughly 2 million undocumented people who arrived in the U.S. as minors in exchange for increased border security funding. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You are listening to an end-of-the-year fund drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In-Depth. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some drizzle and a low of 34 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy as well with a high of 43. Today in history, in 2006, NASA reveals photos that suggest the presence of liquid on Mars. The quote of the day is from American jazz pianist and composer Dave Brubeck, who was born today in 1920. He said, quote, There's a way of playing safe, there's a way of using tricks, and there's a way I like to play, which is dangerously, where you're going to take a chance on making mistakes in order to create something you haven't created before. Warning signs on the economy, like high inflation rates, persist. But one organization is urging Washington state lawmakers to resist budget cuts. It says instead, the pandemic has proved that investments in public policy programs can help people. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
The Washington state 2023 legislative session is fast approaching, and one group is urging lawmakers to prioritize investments over cuts to the budget. Tracy Underwood with the Seattle-based nonprofit Economic Opportunity Institute says the federal government and the state made major investments in public welfare during the pandemic. She says policies such as the federal child tax credit, which reduced child poverty to record lows, and stimulus checks helped families through difficult times.
What we know from all of that is that they have had massive positive impacts on people and households and families, and we need to continue to do that. Now's not the time to step back. The problem's not fixed.
While factors such as inflation and high fuel costs could persuade lawmakers that cuts are needed to keep the economy going, Underwood notes that the state needs to address massive wealth and racial disparities. She says legislators should invest in programs that improve the public good.
Affordable and accessible health care, fair taxes that provide ample funding for these programs, stable and dignified work for all people, so thinking about paid family medical leave, funding and language access, and child care compensation.
Underwood adds that lawmakers also should invest in programs that create economic stability, such as a guaranteed income pilot project and establishing baby bonds, which would create a pool of money for children that they could access when they turn 18. Underwood says everybody deserves to live safe and stable lives.
Right now, that's really tenuous for a lot of people. And so we have the means, we have the ability to make this happen, which is exciting. And so that's something that I hope that we all work towards this coming legislative session.
The legislative session begins on January 9th. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A new Environmental Protection Agency proposal to reduce air pollution at oil and gas operations will help improve health outcomes. Public health advocates say that it's particularly important for the communities that live near well sites. Eric Galatas has the details in Colorado.
Public health advocates are welcoming a new proposal to reduce harmful air pollution by limiting methane waste at oil and gas facilities. Sabrina Pacha with Healthy Air and Water Colorado says medical professionals have long been sounding the alarm about the health impacts of methane pollution, which has been linked to respiratory illness, cardiovascular disease, stroke, Alzheimer's, and poor maternal health.
Folks who are pregnant, who are living in areas with elevated rates of methane pollution, are at higher risk of preterm birth, low weight birth, and in severe cases, even higher rates of maternal and fetal illness and death.
Reducing methane pollution, which is more than 85 times more potent at trapping heat in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, is also seen as critical for mitigating climate change. The EPA's proposal, under authority of the Clean Air Act, calls on oil and gas operations to find and repair leaks, capture gas lost through venting and flaring, and other proven strategies already at work across Colorado. Critics of efforts to rein in waste have argued it places an undue cost burden on smaller operators. Proponents point out there are cost-effective options available for operations at all scales, in part because producers are able to bring lost natural gas to market. Recently passed federal infrastructure and climate legislation also provides significant funding to reduce waste. Pacha believes other states should be able to adopt the EPA's proposed regulations, which are similar to protections already at work in Colorado.
And we were able to achieve those in partnership with business groups who have really stepped up to the table. So if our Colorado businesses can do it, folks across the country can meet those standards as well.
The EPA is accepting public comments on its proposal and will hold public hearings. The rule is expected to be finalized next year. Overall, Pacha believes the proposal is strong in cutting methane pollution, but she would like to see additional limits expanded to all states, similar to those adopted by Colorado on routine flaring, where operators burn off excess gas.
Unfortunately, air pollution can't be contained in just one state. It's a multi-state issue, so we'd like to see the federal government match our Colorado standards when it comes to routine flaring.
This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
The South Dakota Attorney General's Office has hired a special coordinator for addressing missing and murdered indigenous people in the state. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. An Oglala Lakota woman will lead a position to coordinate resources to find missing and murdered indigenous people. The South Dakota Attorney General's office is announcing the hiring of two women to address the issue as well as human trafficking. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Indigenous people make up a disproportionate number of missing person cases, about 60% in South Dakota alone. Many of those cases can get lost between jurisdictions. Allison Morissette's new job is to bring the state and various tribal nations together to solve those cases. Morissette, who worked in the Pennington County State's Attorney's Office, says the position is needed.
I am excited to network more and to get organizations, law enforcement agencies, nonprofits, everybody to the table so that way we can try to target this issue.
After a series of delays tied to funding, a Native nonprofit announced it would fund the first 3 years of the position in the state. Democratic Representative Pree Poirier brought the bill to establish the position nearly 2 years ago. She said the position is off to a promising start.
There's a lot of hope, no pressure, but there's a lot of hope in this position, but there's many people across South Dakota who want to see this position successful.
Attorney General Mark Vargo is also announcing the hiring of a human traffic coordinator. He says Mary Beth Halsworth will build on efforts of various survivor networks for those who've been trafficked. Halsworth spent 13 years with an organization dedicated to preventing child sexual assault. Vargo says the two positions are linked.
We all face some of the same problems, and we have to face them together. And it is my hope that these two women will be a huge step toward ensuring that we are united, that we are coordinated, and that we are doing everything we can for our citizens.
Vargo says the next step is establishing an advisory group of state and tribal law enforcement leaders and community members who are closest to the problem. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
In California, tribal leaders are joining Native American state lawmaker James Ramos and law enforcement on Wednesday to learn about the implementation of a new law, which alerts the public when a Native person goes missing. The Feather Alert notification system is similar to the Amber or Silver Alerts, which are used when children are abducted or missing or when seniors are missing. The new Feather Alert system is intended to help law enforcement act more quickly in notifying the public and produce leads to help find missing individuals. The discussion will be held in Coarse Gold, California. The Interior Department has announced new policies and procedures that aim to make consultation between the federal government and tribes more interactive and transparent. Under Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the new policy will require department staff training prior to tribal consultation. The new policy also outlines specific goals for consultation with Alaska Native corporations. The announcement follows a few others from the department in the last month regarding the allocation of millions of dollars in climate change funding to tribes nationwide. Brian Newland is the Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs.
These investments in Indian country first and foremost reflect President Biden's commitment to Indian country. But it's also a reflection of Secretary Haaland's leadership here.
At least two reports from the Government Accountability Office in the last 4 years have chided federal agencies for inadequate consultation with tribes. The Interior Department's announcement was made during the 2022 Tribal Nations Summit held last week in Washington, D.C. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A county in Nevada is considering a ban on selling pets at pet stores. That would include dogs, cats, rabbits, and pot-bellied pigs. There's a public hearing today, and animal advocates support the idea since it would still allow pets to be adopted from shelters. Suzanne Potter has more. You're listening to an end-of-the-year fun drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 6th. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories at and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Leuschner and Mel Gertoff. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonio Gonzalez, Suzanne Potter, Catherine Carley, Eric Tegedoff, Edwin J. Vieira, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-the-year fund drive, so now is a great time to get involved. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In-Depth.
You probably know that KBOO Community Radio is listener-sponsored. But did you know that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you? You can always make a donation to keep KBOO independent and non-commercial at kboo.fm/give. But right now, during our end-of-the-year drive, is the perfect time to contribute. Help us reach our goal of $70,000 by December 31st. Make your tax-deductible year-end donation at kboo.fm/give today. And thanks. Radio is the sound salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio, a production of the Coast Range Association. I'm your host, Michael Gasco. We're recording this show in early December, and I thought it would be a good idea to bring in our executive director, Chuck Willer, to give us a look back on what we at Coast Range Association have been up to in this past year. So right off the top, I just want to welcome Chuck back onto the program. Chuck, thanks for being